Money FM 89.3. Best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Singapore shares opened relatively unchanged this morning after data from Enterprise Singapore showed the country's non-oil domestic exports, or NODEX, fell 0.1% year-on-year in February, weighed down by a decrease in the non-electronics sector. Now, this represented a reversal from the previous month's 16.7% expansion. It also missed the 4.7% median growth forecast by private sector economists. Now, closing numbers, as usual, they are still firming up. But here's what I have on the screen right now with all of that weighing on markets. The Straits Times Index down 0.02% at 3,172 points. In terms of value turnover, we are looking at 967 million Sing dollars. Gainers trailed losers 261 versus 296. Top five movers by value, we've got here Seatrium, DBS, Singtel, Yangtzejiang Shipbuilding, Sing Dollar, and UOB. Heavily traded securities included Seatrium, Thai Beverage and An International. Now, in terms of companies to watch for today, we do have SETS, the company saying that it has sold its ground handler unit Maytag Aircraft for an enterprise value of $46 million. Now, elsewhere, for more on UOL Group and Singapore Land Group, to some 90% of Bank of Japan watchers seeing the risk of authorities ending negative rates tomorrow in Japan, more corporate and international headlines are in focus. And joining me on the line is David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Mr. Kuo, welcome.
Thank you, Katya. We're going to cover all those stories because we probably need 2 days to cover all those stories.
I know we said that we're not going to deep dive. We're going to just kayak and paddle today. Okay, so let's go straight to the NODEX numbers. Singapore NODEX down 0.1% year-on-year in February, which is a surprise deviation from the 4.7% median growth forecast in a Bloomberg poll of private sector economists. Also a reversal from the 16.7% expansion charted in the previous month. Now, I believe one of the reasons have to do with Chinese New Year falling in February this year versus January last year. But overall, right, after accounting for that CNY distortion, how far is this a cause for concern?
I don't think it's a cause for concern at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you take the 2 months, January and February, I mean, they were up about 16% in January, down about 0.1% in February. And so on average, it's about 8% for the 2 months. Yeah. So if you can get 8% NODEX growth annualized over the year, then I would say everything is fine. I think most economists seem to think that it's going to be probably lower than 8% for the year, maybe about 6%. So in general, I would say it's okay. It's a bit like sort of being, you know, four goals up in the first half and then you're down one goal in the second half. I mean, if you only look at the second half and you think you're one goal down, you think you're going to end up losing the game, you don't, because, I mean, on average, it's still okay. So averages are important, and don't look at just monthly data sets.
Okay, and let's go with the Singapore stock market as usual. How has the STI fared so far today after looking at the NODEX numbers? Any surprise when it comes to the biggest movers as well? I believe Dalsin Retail Trust was, what, 16% in the red early on? Tell us more about that.
Okay, well, I think there's been a bit of action going on as far as Dalsin is concerned. They fired their chief executive officer, and the chief executive officer is now turning around and sort of saying he's owed some wages that hasn't been paid yet. I mean, it's not a very pleasant situation to be in, and it's not really surprising that, as far as investors are concerned, it's better to stay out of trouble, and many of them have just decided to take their money home with them and just sort of sit on the sidelines and wait until things start to settle down. If you have a look at how Dalsin has been performing, I mean, over the last 3 or 4 years, it's not been great. And so 16% changes as far as the share price is concerned. When you look at the share price, it's only around sort of 2 or 3 cents. So it doesn't really take an awful lot for it to swing 16%. So just be very careful with this one. Just don't jump in just yet and just see how things pan out.
And zooming in on one of the other companies to watch, Mr. Kuo, we have here SATS. The company on Saturday said it sold its ground handler unit Maytag Aircraft for $46 million following announcement on Friday about plans to acquire another air cargo handler and border inspection business in Sweden for $12.2 million, I believe. How are investors reacting to this?
Investors, do you mean me? Because I am actually a shareholder in SATS. Yeah?
Okay.
I'm pretty confident about SATS. I mean, it's going through a period of change at the moment. And as far as getting rid of the cargo handling company, that one dealt mainly with American, U.S. Air Force bases. And so maybe it wants to be out of that kind of business and go into something more in line with what it wants to do, which is why I bought that Scandinavian airport handling business.
Yes.
And together, I would say that it's moving in the right direction. It still needs to reinstate its dividends at some point in time. But remember, it recently sort of bought a big handling company, and is still sort of trying to digest all of that after its massive rights issue. So it's going to take a year or so, maybe 2 years, before it actually sort of gets its feet back on the ground again.
And aside from SATS, Mr. Kuo, I do want to take a look at UOL Group and Singapore Land Group. Both developers, they on Sunday announced that they sold 74% of the 180 units at their jointly developed residential project. And this, the 133 units, Mr. Kuo, they sold for an average of $3,250 per square foot. Now, what does this say about the property market here in Singapore? And again, any significant impact on the stock counters of UOL and Singland today?
Well, it did really sort of do an awful lot for the two counters, the share price of the two counters. But what it really suggests to me is that demand for property is still exceeding supply. And so that is why the share, that is why the unit prices or the per square footage prices of those properties are as high as they are. What we really need to do is to see more properties coming on stream. And if that were to happen, then I think, you know, properties could become a little bit more affordable. But as it stands at the moment, property prices really are a function of supply and demand. When there is not enough supply and demand is high, then you will find the property prices are going to be strong. But as far as I understand, there is going to be more properties coming on the market. So great for Stamford Land and UOL to be able to sort of get their properties off their hands at the moment, because I think if you sort of wait until later on in the year, I don't think we're going to be achieving those kind of prices.
If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with David Kuo, co-founder of Smart Investor. And across the region, Mr. Kuo, let's take a look at what's happening in Japan. Some 90% of Bank of Japan watchers, they see the risk of authorities ending negative rates tomorrow. Now, that's, of course, as the Federation of Unions, called Rengo, announced on Friday that the members had secured wage increases of 5.28% on average, far above 4.1% predicted by economists surveyed by Bloomberg. This is also the biggest gains in more than 30 years. Now, your thoughts, could officials wait until April before moving away from that ultra-loose policy? How big do you expect the first increase and the terminal rates to be?
Okay, why would they really need to increase interest rates at the moment? Because what they really want to do is to stimulate inflation in Japan.
Yeah.
And they've got inflation around about sort of 2.2%, which is slightly higher than the 2% they wanted. So why would they want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg? Why would they want to increase interest rates? But of course, with interest rates at negative 0.1%, that doesn't stand to reason either. So I think what they will do is probably wait. Many people think that they may go this time around, but I think it would be more prudent if they waited until April before they start increasing interest rates. It'll be just a token increase in the beginning, but I think eventually, I think interest rates down about 0.5% for an economy that has inflation about 2.2% would be okay. What they don't want to do yet is to actually kill inflation. And that was probably why they waited for this wage negotiation to come through. And the wage negotiation was slightly higher than what they, well, what the market was expecting. But that is exactly what they want. They want inflation in the system. So I don't think they're going to try and sort of find some way in which they can kill that inflation off there again.
And don't mind me asking this, Mr. Kuo. Is the decline in the yen a cause for concern in pushing the officials to raise rates? Or is the much-needed inflation that we're seeing the economy way more important than the slide in the yen?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, the yen is definitely down against the U.S. dollar. And I think that's probably another reason why they will wait, because I think they will wait for the Federal Reserve. I mean, we talked about the Singapore market today. Everybody's sitting on their hands because everybody is waiting for the Fed. Will they or won't they start to bring down interest rates? As far as I can see, there is no reason why the Federal Reserve needs to bring down interest rates, which means that that currency exchange rate between the U.S. dollar and the Japanese yen is going to actually sort of keep the yen depressed. Mm-hmm. Will increasing Japanese interest rates by, I don't know, 0.05 or 0.1 or whatever percentage, is that going to change the exchange rate? I don't think it is going to change that yen. So I don't think Japan is too worried. What it wants to do is to be able to export its goods. And the lower the Japanese yen, the better it is for Japan.
Away from Japan, Mr. Kuo, China's National Bureau of Statistics said industrial output rose 7% in the January to February period from the same period a year ago, which is much faster than economists' estimates. Now, if we look at growth in fixed asset investment, that also accelerated. Retail sales increased roughly in line with projections. How should we read into the numbers in totality?
You know what, again, I'm always very skeptical about these numbers that come out from China. And I always much prefer to actually have a look at what companies are telling us. Mm-hmm. You know, across the wires today, I saw that there was a solar panel company in China called LONGi, and they are cutting a third of their workforce. Thousands of jobs are going to go to the solar panel company. How does that square with what we've actually just heard about the industrial production in China? It doesn't seem to sort of make an awful lot of sense. So, yes, by all means, you know, have a look at the figures, but wait until they're verified by the companies. And for what LONGi is telling me today, there's no reason to actually sort of believe that industrial numbers are as strong as they are. And then we'll sort of hear from more companies, and then we'll sort of see exactly sort of what is happening in the Chinese economy. It seems a bit suspicious that they should come just shortly after the big meeting in China, where they were touting about industrial production and how they want to have a new pillar of growth in China. That new pillar of growth, believe it or not, included solar panel. And when a solar panel company sacks a third of its workforce, that gets me a little bit worried.
Okay, and let's take a look at some corporate headlines before we wrap up the conversation. Mr. Kuo, the founder of Vietnamese EV maker VinFast has launched an EV charging stations company called VGreen today, which he said would prioritize supporting VinFast vehicles globally. Any initial reactions looking at the slump in, say, VinFast shares over the past few months?
Well, the thing is, I think it's a very sensible move by VinFast. Because ultimately, when you sell a car, you sell it once, and then that's it. Mm-hmm. If you have the charging station, you get the recurring revenue.
Yes,
Ken Yen, you took the words right out of my mouth. And that is actually sort of the more important part. And so what it's doing is exactly the right thing. And that is also something that Tesla is doing. I mean, Tesla has all these charging stations, and it allows their cars to charge. So I think it is the right strategy. And I think selling cars is one thing, but having the charging stations is probably something that will play out over the longer term if we believe that electric vehicles are going to be as lucrative or as successful as they are. But there's going to be a lot of competition in the EV sector, probably less competition as far as the charging stations are concerned.
And I've got about 1.5 minutes to go, Mr. Kuo, and I really want to squeeze in this piece of juicy news that is just up about 2 hours ago, and that is Apple being in talks to let Google's Gemini power iPhone AI features. And apparently Apple was also in talks with Microsoft's OpenAI as well. Any initial reactions to this piece of news?
Well, I think it probably suggests to me, and I saw this piece of news also, and it suggests to me that as far as Apple is concerned, what it's trying to do is to delegate the responsibility of AI to somebody that knows what they're doing. And I think in this case, they've chosen Google's Gemini. They could have gone with another company. It could have gone with the Microsoft company, but it decided that the terms and conditions were probably better with Google. And I think this was something that was worrying a lot of people, that maybe Apple was getting left behind as far as AI was concerned. But now with this piece of news, it means that when we have the next operating system coming out from Apple, it means that AI will be available on our phones, which I think is a great thing. I don't know how to use it just yet, Jen, but, you know, eventually I probably will. I didn't know how to use Google in the first place because I was still on things like Master Jeeves and Yahoo. And eventually I moved to Google, and I can't see life without it at the moment. Just like I can't see life without Chelsea. And I just need to mention that Chelsea
won.
We have to go back to that. Okay, I put in Manchester United. So congratulations to Manu and, of course, Elliot.
Right, and well, key to note that this is based on a Bloomberg report at the moment, and that Apple, Google, and OpenAI did not immediately respond to Reuters' request of comment. So lots to watch in the coming days. Thanks, as always, Mr. Kuo. That was David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.